Hey Caffeinators, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the veterinary field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question, comment, or would like to be a guest on the Vet Tech Cafe, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com, or you can find us at our website, vettechcafe.com. One thing we would ask of you, our listeners, is to rate and review us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. We're not exactly sure how or why this helps us, but apparently it does. So without further ado, come on in, grab yourself a cup of coffee, and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe.
Hello, Caffeinators. Welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. We never have a wait, and we are always appropriately staffed. A special shout out to our Caffeinators in the Netherlands. If you missed our episode with Ninky, check it out today. I think that was in 2022, Dave? Was that right?
I think so. Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. Definitely check out that episode. We'd like to thank all of our Caffeinators for their continued support, getting our merchandise, Patreons. Thank you so much for your support. And everybody out there continuing to download our episodes and subscribing to our channels. If you're new to the Vet Tech Cafe, if this is the first time you're here, head over to vettechcafe.com for all of our intro, who we are, why we do this, and be sure to like, subscribe, and follow us. Follow along. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and we do have a YouTube channel as well. Dave, how's it going out there? What's on your mind?
It's good. I'm just getting excited to go to Phoenix to hang out with you and have our quote unquote staff meeting.
Yes.
With our staff of two. And just hearing, it seems like this year we're going to have more people that are going to come hang out with us. Last year, we said, yeah, we'll hang out with anybody that wants to show up, and nobody showed up. And this year now we've got a couple things in the works. So I'm excited for that. Working a few shifts this week. So going to earn some money for the trip, which I think is good.
Nice.
But I'm excited to come see you. I'm excited to see some of the Caffeinators that we've been in touch with. It's going to be such a good time.
Yeah,
it's going to be
for sure.
I looked at the weather. It's not going to be a change for you, but for me, it's been 60s at best, and out there it's going to be in the 80s. So I'm excited for 80 degree weather. But yeah, that's about it that's going on here. Just prepping for our trip. How are you guys doing out there?
We're good. It's been still rainy and kind of chilly, but I think that's supposed to subside as we get later into the week, right about the time we head out of town,
which means
if it's 70 here, it's going to be 80 plus in Phoenix. So definitely going to be some good baseball weather. I was thinking earlier today, too, I saw a post on Facebook by one of the interns I worked with while I was at Tufts. And we've talked a lot about my time at Tufts here and just in academia in general. And, it is what it is. But I was thinking after I read this person's post that it also gave me a really, really unique opportunity to work with a lot of, veterinarians that had just graduated and, if they were interns or maybe 1 year out, if they were residents, and opportunity to work with so many people that I never would have met in this profession otherwise, or would have never worked with. And since we have another education episode lined up today, I thought it was just a good reminder that, we obviously, if you work in clinic, you work with the group of people you work with, and that may change as people move on or people come in. But when you work in that kind of position, and I think you were somewhere for a while that had interns and residents and
people that
are there truly for a year or maybe 3 years to learn. And then like they go out into the veterinary world and then, through these days in social media, you can kind of follow along with what they're doing. And this person, after she left Tufts, she went to go do wildlife, and she now is taking a job. I couldn't remember the town or the place, but it's a veterinary facility in wildlife management in North Carolina, and it's a really, really cool opportunity.
Oh, cool.
And it's like, I never would have read this post. I never would have met this veterinarian that's going off to do this amazing thing if it weren't for my time at Tufts. So, I for as all the stuff that I say about my time there, I also like there was some really cool opportunities.
There's always good stuff, right?
Yeah, there is always the good stuff, and a lot of this podcast is you know made me think of like the relationships and the interactions with people we meet along the way and what have you. And it was really cool to read Dr. Torkelson. I don't think she's a caffeinator. I don't think she listens, but it was really cool to read her post today and think like, you know, I actually like knew her when she was just out of vet school, and now she's off doing this amazing thing. So again, just with another education episode today, it was something I was thinking about after I read her post today, and super cool.
And
so,
just thinking, like you mentioned, my time working at the practice that we did have a lot of interns, and people always said, oh, that must be difficult. And I'm like, yeah, sometimes LAC repairs take a couple hours, which
sure
is exhausting, but I love being in the environment where somebody is always learning.
Yes, absolutely.
Because I've also been in practices where the people have been there forever, and it's just kind of like
being box checkers and not
having anything to move forward to. So I love being around people that are learning and trying to get better.
Absolutely. You know, when it's your 1,000th whatever this procedure or whatever it is, and you've got literally no more excitement for it, but for that person, it's the first one they're seeing, and it's like, you know, it's actually like a good reminder.
I equate that to when I moved to North Carolina, I was so excited for snake bites because in New Hampshire, we didn't really get snake bites. There was like a small rattlesnake population up in the mountains, but I lived in Manchester. There was no, we didn't have snakes. We had garter snakes. And when I came down here, you know, from our time studying about snake bites, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to get to see that. And the first one I saw, I took pictures. I was so excited. Mm-hmm. It was so cool. But then after like the third one that weekend, I'm like, this is very similar to porcupine quills up north, where it's cool and unique for people that haven't seen it before, but on your 700th porcupine quill removal, it's like, not exciting anymore. But
yeah, then the only time those were cool or exciting. Yeah, for sure. You know, when like there was like a migrating quill that, I don't know, ended up in the pericardium and you had to CT it, and then it was all cool again. But it's funny how like things are relative like that. And I just thought it was a good reminder that like, you know, people you work with, especially if they move on, like this day and age, it's cool to actually follow along and see what they're doing and kind of celebrate their victories too.
At some point in my time working with these young baby doctors that are fresh out of school and even young technicians that are fresh out of school, I like to think that I've left hopefully a positive impact on them and maybe taught them something and, you know, hopefully I'm not the villain in somebody's story.
For sure. I'm sure, especially from my younger days, I probably am. And I'm through this. I'm trying to right a lot of those wrongs. But, you know, here we are, c'est la vie.
Yeah.
So we've got another awesome episode today. We have Jennifer Gunther coming by the Vet Tech Cafe. And we've been talking a lot about veterinary technician education, it seems, in 2024. And which has been a goal of ours. And it's just like a lot of these episodes kind of came together all at once where we were contacted or got in contact with many different people. And so it's been, you know, we had a couple of students on already. It was really cool to see their kind of unique perspectives. And we've got some other educational stuff in the works too. So really, really fascinating stuff. Jennifer is an RVT in Colorado, and we're going to talk about that today. I'll mention more about that in a moment. And has been involved in veterinary medicine over 30 years. She started out in upstate New York as a veterinary assistant and then went into the veterinary technology program right after high school. She worked as an LVT in New York and then moved to Colorado to attend Colorado State University. She worked in veterinary clinics at the CSU Veterinary Teaching Hospital to support her educational expenses and then earned her BS in wildlife biology and spent time working with Mexican spotted owls and black-footed ferrets. After moving to Denver in 1997 and working within the veterinary community for a few years, she turned to teaching and has been with the Community College of Denver for 20 years. Her primary roles there include coordinating the internships, teaching pharmacology, and managing the apprentice track. In 2020, she was instrumental in launching the first ever United States Department of Labor Registered Veterinary Technology Apprenticeship. That's what a lot we're going to talk about today. The unique learning track allows the opportunity for those that thought going to school to become a veterinary technician was not realistic for them and to realize all that they can do. So, Jennifer, thank you very much for taking some time out to come by the Vet Tech Cafe. We really, really appreciate it. What can we get you for a cup of coffee?
You know, I'm straight up like traditional, just a coffee. And then I do like, I usually fill the cup about halfway with creamer. So.
Oh, okay. All right. I love it. I love it. We'll get right on that. If you don't mind, I know I kind of hit some of the highlights there, but take us through your career path, kind of what started you out in veterinary medicine or what drew you to it, some twists and turns along the way. We're going to talk a lot about what you're doing now, but kind of what led you to that point.
Yeah, and I think you actually did a great job, Jeff, summarizing my career path. I always, working with animals, I always knew. Like, that was never a question. When I was 12, actually growing up in a small town, at the age of 12, I was able to start volunteering in a local shelter. I know nowadays that's not as easy because of legalities and stuff, but I was 12, and then 15. So I progressed from the shelter as a volunteer, 15 working in just a local animal clinic, again, small town, where everyone brought their animals. And I worked there throughout high school. And then I knew right out of high school that I was going to tech school. I worked with an excellent veterinary technician. So I kind of followed her path, and she took me on a tour of where she went to school, and just really right out of high school went to vet tech school. And after that, I did start working full time. I was pretty young because I went to vet tech school right out of high school. And I knew like I wasn't done yet, like I needed to do more. So that's after working for a bit, I came to Colorado to obtain my bachelor's degree. And throughout that whole time, I kept working in the field. I was working part time, worked a little bit in the teaching hospital, CSU, veterinary teaching hospital, and then worked in some clinics until I earned my bachelor's degree. As you mentioned, I dabbled in wildlife, had a lot of fun with that, working with black-footed ferrets and Mexican spotted owls, but not really an easy path to keep it sustainable. So I moved to Denver over the course of earning my vet tech degree and earning my bachelor's degree and moving to Denver. I worked about 10 years in the field as a veterinary technician, and then was approached by a friend of mine and said, you know, we have a teaching spot open. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, let's try it. I didn't know. And honestly, that was over 20 years ago. And it's just been... it's been a great fit, and I've really enjoyed it. So, but going back to the career path, animals was always it for me. I just never knew what direction that would lead. But being a veterinary technician, and then now teaching veterinary technicians, I feel like I'm in the right place.
And just thinking about like your students and the way that the profession has kind of progressed over the 30 years that you've been in the field.
Yeah.
What's your opinion of the profession? Like what's your state of the profession assessment?
The field of veterinary technology is actually not that old, right? It came about in the late 60s. Mm-hmm. And from then till now, I think the last few years, it has exploded. And I mean, in the way of the animal care that we provide, right? We're not just doing vaccines and basic animal care. I mean, it's equivalent to human medicine, where we're doing MRIs and CAT scans and chemotherapy and open heart surgery. I mean, it's just the knowledge is in a period of immense growth. Trying to keep up with that as a teacher is really difficult, but really exciting. Like, I have students that go to internship and they tell me things and I'm like, what? And I'm just blown away by what my students are seeing in veterinary clinics. I think it's an awesome time to be in veterinary medicine. And just with all, you know, you were talking about in your introduction, having interns come in, and sometimes places are stagnant and they're not doing a lot of new things. but there's so much opportunity right now to see new cool stuff. I think being in the Denver area, we have a lot of great hospitals here too, closer to a major city, but it's a pretty exciting time to be in the field.
Yeah. And I think back to my time, like first starting out this was in the late 90s where the technicians had just gotten the doctors to allow them to intubate, you know, and thinking back to that, and granted, there were a lot of things that we did back in those days where I think back and say, oh boy, that was not the best anesthetic protocol, but
yeah.
Right.
Oh boy. But
just the change that we've seen over the time that we've been in the field has been great because,
right.
And I think social media is part of that too. Whereas back when we all started, social media was not a thing. The internet was barely a thing. and now we have access to what's going on in other parts of the country and what's going on in different clinics in our area. Whereas when I first started, I only knew what was going on in my clinic. I knew nothing else outside of my clinic.
Right.
And now I think with the internet and with the internet, I'm sounding like an old man here.
dinosaur.
With how big social media has grown, I think that there is a lot more opportunity for people to learn things that, like you said, you get your students to come back that are doing things that you never thought possible. And you're getting that information from them. Whereas, you know, 30 years ago, if it happened outside of your clinic, you didn't know it.
Right.
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 And yeah. I think that's amazing that we have gotten that far, that we can utilize those resources to improve what we're able to do and how we do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you also had a great point in there too, that like this, it's been exploding the last few years in terms of what not only what can be done in veterinary medicine, but what our skill level can be. And I think that's a huge part of why the legislation is behind, is because that kind of thing, like, I don't think you can have the forethought to say this group of people is going to be able to do this thing in 20 years and then it'll be relevant and it'll be right then, right? Like,
right.
It has to be reactionary. And of course, the wheels of government turn slow. But like, also, sometimes the people in those positions don't work in those clinics that have the technicians that do all these amazing things. So when somebody tells them, like, hey, as a VTS, I do this stuff every day, and they look at you like, I've never even done that.
Yeah.
And like, how am I supposed to pass a law that allows you to do it when I don't eat, you know, it, like
when I can't
but,
do
but
it.
That's,
yeah.
But that's truly how it truly has just exploded the last, I don't know, handful, 10 years, or whatever number you want to put on it. It is kind of fascinating to think about. And it kind of leads me into like what I'm going to say is my first question here for you. So as I've always known Colorado, it's always been a CVT state. And it's even the CACVT, right? The Colorado Association of Certified Veterinary Technicians, I think. But now, I think it's just 2024 it took place that you guys are now RVTs, correct? So talk a little bit about that. Like what it means for your students and technicians in the state.
Yeah. So I do feel like that Colorado has been a little bit behind in that, where we had an association, we were certified veterinary technicians, but there really wasn't any rules or regulations. Anyone can call themselves a veterinary technician. And really, as the public, there wasn't a lot of knowledge of who was working on their pet. So they're a vet tech, but are they really a vet tech? What should they shouldn't be doing? So we have really awesome leaders now in our vet tech association. So there's been a huge push for this the past couple of years. So right now, as of January 1st, we're RVTs. And the biggest implication is title protection. So you cannot call yourself a veterinary technician, vet tech, or registered veterinary technician unless you have gone through an AVMA school and you've earned that accreditation, you're keeping up with your CE, so you have to meet that criteria. We're still in a little bit of a transitional period in an effort to, we don't want to lose anybody in the field, right? We can definitely not afford that. So allowing some of those technicians, I think they call it a legacy clause, that have been in the field for many years and maybe either didn't go to school or did go to school but never took the boards. So they have provisional status, allowing them to earn those credentials or sign off on their skills so they can become registered veterinary technicians as well. So the big thing has been title protection, which I think ultimately will bring more, and hopefully the public will ask questions, well, what is an RVT when they start seeing those things? We are seeing an increase in applicants to the school for those that are like, hey, you know, I've worked in the field forever, but you know, I'm not a veterinary technician, so now I do want to earn those credentials.
I have a couple follow-ups here. The first one is who asked for that? Like, did the tech association ask for that, or did the vet medical board ask for that?
Both. They work together.
Okay.
Both to make sure that everyone is in agreement. Really. The push was from the CACVT, the Colorado Vet Tech Association, but getting the Veterinary Medical Association in Colorado on board with it as well.
Yeah.
And the process itself, like I don't know how, if you're involved, I'm assuming you're involved in the association, but how did that process go? Was it like a long drawn out thing, or like what are the steps that had to be taken to make this happen?
Yeah. So, and I will say I'm a little bit detached from like the legislature, but there was multiple steps over the past couple of years to go through this. And we were always getting emails from the Vet Tech Association about the process, but really, it had to be signed off by the governor. So it had to go through that legislative process, get signed off by the governor. And then of course, getting the Vet Medical Association on board. So it is a legal process, right? Where it's actually, if you call yourself a veterinary technician and you're not, it is now a misdemeanor offense.
Oh, wow.
So it did go through the legal process.
Great. Mm. And for
only 2 years, seems like that didn't take long at all for
no,
to be only
and
2 years.
No, and I would say that's... And I'm like, they're probably going to listen and say, we were working on that for 10 years.
There's probably a lot of background before that.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Before it really got
there
put
was
into
a
the
lot
public
of,
side.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of hard work, I'm sure, leading up to that time frame. And caffeinators, especially for our international listeners, or maybe even some in the U.S., because I didn't really realize there was some of these differences in the actual titles until like a year ago when it came up in the discussion, but there is actually differences between CVT, RVT, LVT, like in California where I am, we're RVTs, but we are registered with the state. We have the title protection, like Jennifer was talking about, all of those things. A lot of times CVT states, they are, that certification is granted. You're basically certified by, or however you want to phrase it, with the Vet Tech Association. They do the membership dues and all that, but it's not actually like a legal protected title or those things. And then license is kind of close to RVT. So there is actual subtle differences. And that's actually part of the reason I think why like a national credential or national title is like hard to settle on, is because some states don't have it. Like if you're a CVT state, you probably don't already have a lot of those protections in place, or you would be RVT or LVT. And so there are actual subtle differences in what RVT, CVT, and LVT means in those individual states. And I frankly didn't learn that till like a year ago. So like very, very, very bizarre stuff. So
When I got my CVT, I knew that there was LVTs and RVTs, but I just said, oh, that's just what they call them in other states, not realizing that there was actual differences.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's get into what we wanted to talk.
Yeah.
Let me check on time. We're 23 minutes in.
We're good.
Dive into something when we're halfway through. That happens quite often. So you've been at Community College of Denver for 20 years and you're managing the apprenticeship track.
Yes.
What does that role look like, and how does that differ from the veterinary technician track?
Yeah, so the apprenticeship track, as far as like my role in managing it, a big thing at this point, now that it's up and running and well established, is promoting it, accepting applicants, working with our employers, working with the apprentices, and then we also work with Apprenticeship Colorado. It used to be under the U.S. Department of Labor, but now the state of Colorado does have their own apprenticeship agency. So working with them as far as making sure everyone's in our database and registered, just really working closely for the most part with our employers and with the apprentices is my role.
Okay.
Yeah. So it is another option for veterinary technician education. So we have, when students apply to our program, they can select the 2-year traditional veterinary technician associate's degree. They can select the 3-year option, which is same courses. It's just a little bit slower paced, allowing the students to work more. Or they can choose the apprenticeship track. So all three of them, you get the same degree. It's an associate's degree. You're eligible to sit for the national exam, and you take all the same courses. Hmm. So it's really choosing a different learning style, whatever you think is best for you. Because we know, like, any more traditional education is hard. At a community college, we do have a lot of older or non-traditional students. So doing that 2 years full-time, vet tech education is intensive. So it's a different learning option, but same degree, same courses and everything. In addition to the associate's degree, when they graduate, they also get a certificate from Apprenticeship Colorado saying that they completed an apprenticeship program.
Awesome. So that actually kind of clears a lot of things up for me, and kind of what our next question was going to be was, because I'm an alternate route student. So yep. I did alternate route here in California. Frankly, at the time, I didn't notice the difference between the two. And I also didn't realize there were doors that were going to be closed to me because I didn't go the ABMA route. And at the time, there might have been some of the online institutions, but I certainly didn't have the wherewithal to find them. So I was curious, right. Like, was this from like a, you know, reciprocity standpoint or licensure title standpoint? Like, is it alternate route? But it absolutely does not sound like it is. It's full blown route. It's just a little bit different pathway to do it. So
yes,
they can very easily take that credential and go to other states or what have you, all that stuff.
Exactly. They're graduating okay. with the same thing that our other students graduate with.
It's just the okay. length of time that it takes them to get. Is that basically?
It's still
it?
2 years.
Okay.
So, yep, it's a 2-year program. Really, the biggest thing is they're working in a clinic about 30 hours a week.
Oh, okay. So there's more hands-on stuff. Yes. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yes.
I'm still confused a little bit. I'm like, what's the difference here?
You're like, so what? Yeah. So it's, you know, the traditional student will come to campus. They sit in a classroom. They have their labs. You know, we go to the microscope lab. We have surgeries on campus. And then they do their internships off campus. Our apprentices are actually the opposite. So they're working about 30 hours a week with an approved apprenticeship employer. And then most of their coursework is completed through what we call remote learning modules. So they have, how we have it set up is we open up their coursework. So they, like right now, our second semester apprentices are taking pharmacology, surgical nursing, and anatomy and physiology. So all their coursework for 2 weeks will open up. So they have 2 weeks to complete everything for those courses. So it allows flexibility knowing that they're working. However, they have to keep moving forward. They just can't put off their work for months and months and months. And then instead of coming to campus for labs, they're actually completing most of those essential skills at their place of employment.
That's awesome.
Traditional learning, where you're in school in a brick and mortar, where you're teaching them the skills, like who is teaching them the skills like on the job? Are there instructors at these apprenticeship approved hospitals, or how does that work?
Yeah, so it has to be credentialed. So they'll have a mentor, a one-to-one mentor for each apprentice. And that mentor has to be a veterinarian or a credentialed veterinary technician. And so they will sign off on all the essential skills. So we use a database. The apprentice will enter their skills, say, hey, I completed these. And their mentor will validate, saying, yes, they successfully performed these skills. Those mentors they are serving in the role as if they were teachers for us.
Right.
So I train them on our skills, on our database, all the different. So each skill will have associated tasks with that skill. So mm-hmm. I train our mentors on all of that and how to appropriately validate those skills. So they're trained, they know our expectations. We have a really close collaboration. I'm emailing our employers all the time. I'm like, hey, this is what your apprentices are learning this module, so then they can help apply that at their place of employment.
Wow, that's all. That's awesome. I guess one question I would have too is that probably a difficult thing to ask from a student perspective, because they're obviously not going to go, you know, through multiple types of educational pathways. But I'm curious, have you had any feedback from veterinarians or other technicians after these students have finished and graduated and gone through this type of program? I don't know if comparing it to the traditional AVMA route is fair, but like, how do they seem to be doing? Because they've maybe had more hands-on, do they seem like they're further ahead? Or like, has there been any like noticeable differences once these groups have gotten out of and out into practice?
Yeah. So we just started our fourth cohort. So we're still,
still pretty new.
Still trying to like look at a lot of that. One of the things that we've amongst my colleagues have repeatedly talked about that I think is pretty true is the first year of vet tech school, our apprentices seem to be way ahead of the game. Because our traditional students, they start the program and the earliest that they'll do an internship is their second semester.
Right.
But our apprentices, the day they start, they're working in a clinic about 30 hours a week. So their skills just seem to be way advanced really early. Ultimately, when they graduate, we hope that they're all in the same place. But I would say our apprentices get there a lot faster.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah, I like that.
I think that's similar to when I was teaching. I always found that the students that I had that were working as well as going to school seem to grasp some of the stuff a little bit easier because they're immersed in it, right? They're going to school, but they're also working at it. So they're fully immersed in it. So it sounds very similar to what you guys are doing there, which is great. I'm actually fascinated by this, but we need to take our break here and we'll pay some bills and we'll be right back after the break.
Looking to protect your canine patients against parasites? Look no further than Simparica Trio, Serolaner Moxidectin and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets, the first chewable to offer triple protection from heartworm disease, ticks and fleas, and roundworms and hookworms. It's also FDA approved to block infections that may cause Lyme disease by killing deer ticks.
Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures, Serolaner belongs to the isoxazoline class, which has been associated with neurologic adverse reactions. The most common side effects were vomiting and diarrhea.
Visit SimparicaTrioDVM.com for full prescribing information.
The Vet Tech Cafe is sponsored by BetterHelp. Caffeinators, at the Vet Tech Cafe, you know we like to focus on mental health. If you're struggling with depression, burnout, compassion fatigue, or any of the other mental health challenges we discuss on our podcast, getting professional help is a great first step.
We all need help with things like learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries, which empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major mental health challenges.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Dave, I've used BetterHelp. I had really good success with it. I really liked that it was entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. You can also switch therapists at any time for no additional cost.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. They really make it easy for you to get the help you need.
Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/vettechcafe today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vettechcafe. It's time to invest in yourself. Be well, caffeinators.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Vet Tech Cafe. I'm going to say it now, Jeff. We are the official podcast of veterinary technicians. I dare somebody to write us a cease and desist letter.
Yeah.
The NFL has not taken the bait, so I'm going to...
Well, no, we just don't have the funds for that.
I'm going to tempt the profession to write us a cease and desist letter to say we're not the official podcast of veterinary technicians. Jennifer, so we just had our ad for BetterHelp, and we always like to ask our guests after the break, how do you manage your own mental health? I realized you've been in the profession a lot longer than some of our listeners, and you probably have better schemes and tactics to get through some of your mental health challenges. So talk to us about your own mental health.
As a teacher, I'm actually really fortunate in that I have breaks. So I have spring break and I have a longer winter break. And so honestly, that's huge because we know like each semester we're going to get a break. Mm-hmm. And it changes all the time. I think change is good. We get different students all the time. I teach different classes. So it always keeps me on my toes. But I've gotten really good also about, I used to work like 7 days a week. There's always stuff to catch up on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So I've gotten good of setting those limits for myself. Like, you know what? No, I'm not going to do any work this weekend. Maybe Thursday I'll work a little bit later and set those limits. And then I'll take my dog for a walk, and been trying to keep myself fit and go to the gym, or, you know, I like to read. So really just, it can't be all one thing. You know, it can't be all work all the time, or especially in this profession.
Gotcha. And I remember my short time as a teacher. I was a teacher of about 2 years, and it didn't work for me. I was just so stressed all the time because I did not have those boundaries. I was doing something for school 7 days a week, and that's what led me out of the profession. Anyways, I wanted to get back to some of the questions that were circling in my brain before we went to break. So the mentors that you have,
yes.
What's the process for them? Are they like you said that you teach them what you want them to teach during the skills, but how does somebody apply to get that job to be a mentor?
Yeah. So it starts with the clinic. So the clinic has to be an approved apprenticeship employer.
Right.
So really they just have to demonstrate an interest, like, hey, we really want to host an apprentice. And as long as they have a veterinarian and a credentialed vet tech on board, we're happy with that. And they can meet a lot of our skill set. We don't expect any employer to meet all of them.
Sure. Right.
But as long as they can meet a lot of the skills that we require, then we go through, they sign an agreement with the college, just like any internship site would, MOU or affiliation agreement. And then there's paperwork that we do with Apprenticeship Colorado. So we have a set of standards with Apprenticeship Colorado. So they have to agree to those set of standards. So they get a copy of that paperwork, and then they sign their own appendix where they set their wages. They have to have wage increases. So each apprentice, as their skills increase, they have to get increases in wages.
That's awesome.
So they kind of have their own appendix that we add to our standards that they sign off on. So as long as they're willing to do that, I meet with them. I make sure that they know what the expectations are, that they're going to be a mentor, they're going to be teaching, they have to sign off on skills, do occasional evaluations. So as long as they agree to all that, we have some really fabulous employers.
So they don't have to be teachers, they just have to be good technicians.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And willing to teach.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the, absolutely. And so like thinking about those people, or the hospitals themselves. So like, you know, it's a big thing. If you're a vet school, you're a teaching hospital, right? Or in human medicine, you're a teaching hospital. Like, I'd be very curious how the hospital, like, helps that come across to their clientele. Like, you know, we have people that are, you know, learning on site, or like, or maybe through apprentice, do they have to have language up that in the lobby, or like, what, I guess really, what's the responsibility of that to their clients?
Right. Like any new employee, and I haven't seen, and every clinic kind of handles everything a little bit differently, and we allow them to do that. I know one clinic, like, they've had multiple apprentices, and they'll have the name tag and it'll say, you know, Sally Smith, vet tech apprentice. And that I kind of like that because it gets them talking. Mm-hmm. You know, a clinic might say, hey, or a client with a vet tech apprentice.
Right.
I've seen other clinics that in general that even work with interns, maybe not apprentices, they'll have signs up that say, hey, we do, you know, we work with interns. So are you okay with that? So I've seen clinics handle it that way.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
And so what, so thinking about your students, you know, you said all the classes are essentially the same, just that they're going through while they're working 30 hours a week.
Right.
But what are the requirements for them to be accepted into this program? Is there like a, I don't know, like a benchmark of skills that they need to do before they can get into this? Cause obviously they're going to be working on the floor. They right. must do like you vet them to say, if you've already got some skills, you can do this or how does that work?
We don't really, and our employers do know that they could be getting apprentices from all different levels.
Okay.
So we, for any one of our options, the apprenticeship 2-year, 3-year track, we have the same minimum criteria. So we do require biology, English, and math to apply. So that college level that they take that before getting into the program. And then they do have to have some observation hours and letter of recommendation. So that's kind of the baseline for all any of the learning tracks that they choose. With our apprenticeship, we do require a slightly higher GPA, and that's it. And the biggest reason for that is it takes more self-discipline. It's it's a lot to be able to work that much and do the remote modules and get through that coursework. So a little bit higher GPA, but otherwise it's kind of the same across the board.
Okay.
So I have found so far most of our applicants have experience or they're already working in the clinic.
Yeah, they're already doing
that. As an assistant.
Yeah.
And they're going to stay there and go to school. So they do know.
Okay. Yeah. But these people, like they essentially could be like day one veterinary medicine kind of thing.
They
like,
could.
Wow, graduated high school 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Correct. And they do, once I do the initial, so they apply and I make sure they meet the initial criteria. So they have the prerequisite courses, they have the letters of recommendation, and then I connect them with our employers and they are able to see what each employer has to offer. And then they will actually go through the interview process with that employer.
Okay. So how many, I guess, how many students per cohort do you take? And how many of these approved hospitals do you have in your clinic? Like, are you constantly having to expand that number to accommodate more students? Or is that like a goal for the future? Or I imagine there's some logistical challenges in there to make sure you have enough approved places, because you probably have to have those in place before you can accept new students more students into a cohort, right?
Exactly. And it has not become a barrier yet.
Okay.
But I suspect it could be. So that's, we definitely have enough employers willing to participate. We have a few employers that are corporate and have multiple locations. So that makes it easier
that helps,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, we have a smaller employer, but that also has 3 different locations. So we have not run into yet not having enough spots.
Okay.
But it's definitely a concern that it could be.
Okay.
We will take, as long as they meet the criteria and we have a spot for them, we'll take them. So we haven't had to cut off apprentices and say we're full at this point. If for any reason they meet all of the criteria, but they can't meet hiring criteria or become employed for whatever reason, then they're automatically admitted into one of our other learning tracks, the traditional 2 or 3 year.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I know you said that it's a one-on-one mentorship with the mentor and the student, but do you have like hospitals that have more than one apprentice at them?
Yes.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
Yes. Great. We have one hospital that has, they're like, send us more. So they have 3 current apprentices and they have 2 apprentices that have graduated and continue to work there.
Wow,
so we have
awesome.
some that are just hungry for more. Most of our clinics, it's one apprentice at a time.
Okay.
Okay.
But we have another one that has a first year apprentice and then one that's about to graduate this year.
Wow. Okay.
Talking about this program, Jeff, have you ever heard of this before?
Mm-mm, no.
Is this in other areas of the country, or is this unique to Colorado?
We're the first in the country.
Okay. Okay. Because this seems like a fantastic idea, but I've never heard of it. Like, and I've been in education. How did I not know about this?
We were the very first in the country. We had some great support, not only at our school, but also in the state of Colorado in launching this. I have had other schools reach out to me about it. But it's really dependent on your state. So I think it's, like I said, we had all the resources right here in launching this, and people that were familiar with apprentices and knew how to get it going. So I think there's other schools that are interested, but as far as I know, we are still the only school.
Interesting.
Interesting. Cause I'm thinking about like the program I went through here, which is again, alternate route. And I taught there for like 7 years, and other than it's the education component is abbreviated, because usually you have to have so many hours to get into the program, but the other, like all of the other parts of it, as far as, you know, the skills, having somebody that is assigned to you to sign off on your tasks and teach all of the things, like it actually sounds like it's not that big of a leap to get, like, cause I mean, we've been saying in California for a long time, like alternate route was great. It fulfilled a purpose that was there for a long time. But now there are so many online options. There are so many brick and mortar schools. Like, is it still relevant? And it doesn't sound like it's a huge leap to get to this level where they could still then get there. Sure, you add in some extra coursework and all, you know, satisfy all those requirements. But it doesn't sound like it's that big of a leap to get this to more of an AVMA kind of thing, where then they could still have reciprocity, which I don't have, or I, you know, it was very difficult for me to get, or, you know, go right out and take the VTNE or what have you. So, that's really interesting to think about, that for some of those states that do alternate route, like it might not be that different.
Right.
No, and I think the big thing that was probably the hardest for, so we are, as far as apprenticeships are concerned, we're considered the sponsor. So it's a partnership. You need a school to partner with the clinics. And then, of course, getting registered with your, we are an official registered apprenticeship program. So, and that was through the U.S. Department of Labor. So being, that was probably the hardest part to go through was the U.S. Department of Labor.
The legal stuff was the hardest part. Shocking,
right? We're a state school, so having like just multiple government agencies working together to get,
of course.
But again,
working
we
together.
Had, yes, we had great
together
support, right, to get it together. But yeah, so we're the sponsor. That's our official title. So you have to have that school and clinic partnership.
Okay. And do you know, is there a goal? Or, I mean, again, I know this is, you're in your fourth cohort, so still all very new, but is it a goal, or is there discussion for other places in Colorado to, or other maybe 2-year programs to maybe try to bring this into their repertoire as well, so to speak, and have this more of an available path? Or is it for the foreseeable future just with you guys at Denver Community College?
As far as I know, for the foreseeable future, just us. I've had, like I said, other people ask questions. We are part of the community college system. So we're one of 13 community colleges in Colorado. So a couple of the other community colleges that have veterinary technician programs have talked to me a little bit about it.
Sure.
But I do think it's a lot for somebody that just doesn't know where to start. And our dean was really familiar with apprenticeship programs. So she, when she first brought it to my attention, I did a little bit of kicking and screaming and was like, oh, that sounds terrifying, but really pushed it. So I think you need somebody who is really super motivated to take it to the level that it needs to be.
Gotcha. Does CSU have a vet tech program, or no? Are they one of the vet schools that
they do
not?
They do not.
Okay.
They do not.
Because I know there's a handful that do, and I can't name them off the top of my head other than Michigan State and Purdue, or maybe they're the only ones, I don't know. But I would feel like in those clinics, this would be like a perfect thing to offer, because I mean, there's unlimited work to do in a vet school. I mean,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
And we have talked to them. They're going through a lot of changes and building a new building, sure. But they had interest in partnering with us. So that would be an excellent goal for the future.
Okay.
I have a little bit of a difficult question for you. I have worked as the teacher sending students out for their externships, and I've also worked at clinics where we've taken in technician students as their mm-hmm. externs. Now, where your apprentices are working at a practice for 30 hours a week for a couple years? Yes?
Yes. No? At least yeah. 2 years, yes.
So the externships are usually, I forget, it's like 10 weeks maybe. I can't remember exactly how long it was. But we've always had personality conflicts or work ethic conflicts where we're either the technicians aren't getting along with the staff, or do you ever have that with your mentors in your students? And then how do you, like, do they have to go to a whole new clinic if it really just isn't working out, or do they have to figure out a way to make it work?
Yeah. So we would hope that the interview process will help identify some of that. Because sometimes you know, when you meet somebody, you're like, there's no way this is going to work. Or you're like, these are my people. This is awesome. So you kind of get a little bit of that. There is, in our standard, 6 months where anyone could discontinue the relationship for any reason.
Okay.
So we haven't had any. There was one apprentice that we moved. So we are able to move if we need to. But so far, it hasn't been a big issue.
Knock on wood. Knock on wood.
Exactly. Exactly.
I was going to ask. So, I mean, I pretty much everything we've talked about so far has highlighted how unique this program. But have we missed anything about it yet? Like, as far as what's different about it or what makes it unique or stand out?
One of the things I do want to make sure.
Because it's the only thing. It's the only one.
Right. It's unique because it is an apprenticeship program. But I want to point out, sometimes there's confusion where some people are like, well, this sounds like an online program. And it's really not. And we like to make that clear. It's not an online program. Even though a lot of their coursework, we like to call them remote modules. From what I've heard, and a lot of the online programs are in a clinic and that's it, and they do their coursework as they can. We have a really close relationship with our apprentices. So we tell our employers that they can't work Fridays. They can work any day of the week, but they can't work Fridays because we reserve Fridays for them to come to campus. So we get to know them really well. They get to know all their instructors and they get to know each other. If they're not working with them, they get to know their cohort when they're on campus. And those Fridays, they don't come every Friday, but probably 6 to 8 Fridays a semester. And we work on those skills that their employers don't do. So for example, a lot of employers don't do in-house lab work. So we'll have them come and we'll do heartworm tests and fecals. We don't have any apprenticeship employers at this time that have large animal. So we'll take them out to the equine and the cattle facilities that we work with. So we do, I think that close relationship is really, really important between the apprentices as a cohort, between their instructors, and then between the school and between the employers.
I was going to ask about that is like, do they ever actually get to know each other as a group? Because if they were doing, you know, remote coursework, as you said, like what opportunities do they have to actually interact and become a class, so to speak? So that's good to hear. And that's actually really, I think, really good way to set that up, that like one day of the week where they do not work, like that's part of the contract or what have you. So this is our day with them, and do all the other things that they're, like you said, they're not going to learn there, because that's a huge part of it, I'm sure.
Exactly. And even our first year apprentices, as I mentioned, I teach pharmacology. So I've had them come out some Fridays and we've been working on medical math, because sometimes that's hard to figure that out through the remote modules. So we have them come out. We're working on CRIs and drug calculations and things like that.
Hmm. Gotcha. That's really cool. We talk a lot about mental health on this podcast, obviously. Does the curriculum provide any education to students about that in the field? Obviously, if they're working in the clinic, they're going to see some of those things.
You know, we at this time, I will say, don't have formal curriculum in it. We talk about it all the time. It's a big discussion because it's so in the forefront right now. So we do talk about it a lot. One of our classes, actually, I'm in the process of it. We are redoing it. So, and we're adding in a whole, it's our office procedures class that we talk about euthanasia and different computer systems. So we're going to add in a whole module on different things for mental health, how to identify mental health, and some tips and tricks for clinics. So we are really trying to get that added in a more formal way.
That's great.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
The apprenticeship as well, allowing students, right? Because vet tech education doesn't work for everybody, and allowing them to figure out what does work, maybe working 30 hours a week and being an apprentice or going to traditional school, I would think only could help their mental health, like figuring out which education route works best for them to realize their dreams.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've talked about this recently, like when we were at IBEX this past year, one of our
in Colorado,
one of our friends did a generational gap and like learning tendencies lecture, and it was fascinating. But she even said, like, this mode of speaking at a conference, me standing at a podium, you guys sitting in chairs, like, it's outdated. Like, most young people don't learn this way anymore. And so, like, the idea of like which path is going to be best for you, because as you were saying earlier, like I know I would not do well with an online program. I am terrible. I'm a terrible self-starter when it comes to study. Like, I frankly, I need to be in a classroom. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with the material or learning it. It's making myself actually do it. Whereas if I have to be in class from 7 to 10, I'm going to be in class. But yeah, that idea of allowing them to, for lack of a better phrase, choose your own adventure, I think is a great idea.
Right.
Yeah. So as we're getting, I don't know how we're getting towards our hour here. Is there anything that we haven't brought up or talked about that you wanted to get out to our listeners?
I'm looking at my notes here. Both of you have done, honestly, a wonderful job. So I appreciate having this sounding board. But I think just being open-minded, you know, again, like you're talking about conferences, it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
And I think as with vet tech education, we've been not really open to change. So I think being open to that and seeing that there are other options out there. We had our first cohort that we had 100% pass rate on the national exam.
Awesome.
So it does show that it works.
Yeah.
You know, we can think outside the box. We need people in the field. We need veterinary technicians. We need veterinary staff in general. So we need to figure out just some unique ways to get them into our clinics.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think one thing I would recommend to you is the CVTEA conference. You should submit to talk about this at the CVTEA conference and say, hey, this is what we're doing. Now that you've got a number of cohorts and a couple of years behind you, say, look, this is what we're doing and this is working. I think the community would love it. And we might see more of these things. Not to take away your unique status, but I think this would be great for the profession.
Yeah, agree.
I agree. And we're okay sharing that status. I mean, there's plenty to go around.
You'll always be the first.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Absolutely. Is there a person or a topic that you would like us to either talk to or talk about in a future episode?
I think talking to one of our apprentices or a graduate or even our employers.
Yeah.
And getting the employer's perspective on it would be a great idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Feel free. We'll talk off air because we always ask like what notes we want to put in the show or what links or whatever. Yeah. We'll definitely get some contact info. Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah. We might have lost Dave. He'll be back in just a moment.
That's okay.
So I will, just in case he doesn't make it back, I will do our last question, which is our would you rather question. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
All right. So you have to choose question 1, question 2, or question 3.
Okay.
I'm back.
Oh, there he is. She hasn't chosen yet, Dave. I just kind of prepped her that okay. She's got to choose one, two, or three.
Three.
Yeah, I lost internet connection for some reason. All right, number three. This is one that's been on the list for a while. So would you rather all of the beds that you sleep in have the scratchiest of wool blankets or, and this is kind of related to Jeff, the blankets are too short to cover your feet and your upper torso at the same time?
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. That's really, and this is so relative because I'm a terrible sleeper. I like every night I feel like is a battle.
Oh, no.
So these both just sound like a nightmare. Oh, I think I have to go with the scratchy.
Oh,
because I would be covered.
I would take the short blankets and then just curl up into a ball.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking if it's scratchy, I can just cover myself in like pajamas from head to toe.
That's true.
Yeah.
You have found, see, that this question always turns into how can we find a loophole in these
would
you rather.
Right.
Is the loophole, is you just
for sure.
Wear all the clothes so you don't feel the blanket. Right. I love it.
For sure. Right. For sure.
I mean, they both just sound like they would add to my sleeping
problems.
Issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I live kind of with the second part of the question every night because I'm 6'6", so I'm the length of my Cal King bed.
Yes.
So I always kick my feet out because they're hanging over the bed anyway.
Right.
And so my feet are almost out all the time anyway. So I guess I've just adapted to it and I would.
But you could wear socks, Jeff.
I could, but I don't. Oh, gosh, I love it. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for taking some time out to
talk
to us about all this today. This was absolutely fascinating. And I hope 10 years, 20 years from now,
that
we're not talking about the uniqueness of the program. We're talking about it being the first of, frankly, a wave of change in veterinary technician education. Because I certainly, everything we talked about this last hour, I don't see a negative to it.
Me neither.
I don't. So that was wonderful. Well,
like I said, I've always thought that the students that I had that were working in clinics while they were going through school grasped the information much better. This is, I don't want to say forcing them to do it, but it gives them the option to do that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you very much
for the
time. We really, really appreciate it. Caffeinators, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Be well, and we will talk to you guys again soon.
Bye, guys.
Hello, caffeinators! We wanted to thank Dog Days Consulting for managing our social media and helping with the interior design here at the Vet Tech Cafe. They don't just do social media, they can help you identify your brand through brand coaching. The founder is a CVPM with 15 years' experience in veterinary practice management. They are a small business proudly serving the veterinary community, and we are thrilled to be working with them. Check them out at www.dogdaysconsulting.com. Hey, caffeinators! We would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As everybody is well aware by now, we often talk about difficult issues that face our profession. In addition, we chat with colleagues and leaders in our field who have strong opinions of these issues. Those opinions expressed by either Dave or Jeff as the hosts, or those opinions expressed by our guests, are their opinions alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity inside or outside of the scope of veterinary medicine. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com or visit our website, www.vettechcafe.com. Lastly, whatever platform you utilize to hear our dulcet tones, please rate and review our podcast and like and follow our Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn pages as well to see what we're up to. From all of us at the Vet Tech Cafe, have yourself a great day.